a harrowing listener story of a near miss, and we'll answer listener email. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. Being Monday, it's time to talk with Bob Miller, CFI, flight instructor in the Buffalo, New York area, and the producer, publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, which you can find on the web at overtheairwaves.com. Bob, thanks very much again for taking some time out.
Well, as always, Paul, and I'm glad you mentioned it comes out roughly monthly.
Well, it's roughly monthly, and some months are a little rougher than others.
That's for sure.
All right, listen, but we talked about some of the hazards that can exist in your home traffic pattern and invited listeners to email, and if they had any other hazards that we didn't mention. And Daryl Jones of Chicago, who is one of our Aeronews listeners, wrote me an email, and he said, Paul, pilots entering the traffic pattern in non-standard approaches without communicating are another one of the hazards found at uncontrolled airports. And by approaches, I think what Daryl's getting at here is that most of us know that if we're coming up on an airport, we want to get to roughly pattern altitude and then get on the radio and announce that we're entering the downwind on a 45, and we want to make sure that we do that prior to midfield. And there's a couple of general rules of the road, but there isn't really a lot of specificity in terms of looking in the FAR or the AIM to find out exactly how we should go about this, and there is room for misunderstanding.
Well, there is lots of room for misunderstanding, and I think that's because of the many varieties of conditions that exist at our over 4,600 airports in the United States, most of them, of course, being non-towered airports. But you mentioned one of the first no-nos that is perhaps one of the most often abused practices when entering the pattern, and that is descending down to the pattern altitude while in the pattern. Good form tells us that we should be at pattern altitude at least 2 miles before reaching the pattern, so that we can look out straight ahead and see others in the pattern, and others can see us if we're at the pattern altitude. So descending into the pattern definitely is bad form.
Well, I was flying once at the Aurora State Airport in Oregon, and I was just practicing some pattern work, and I heard a guy announce on the radio that he was in the pattern on downwind at 4,000 feet, and I didn't challenge him at the time. I kept my eye out and I announced where I was, but I was thinking to myself, pal, if you're at 4,000 feet, I'm sorry, you are not in the pattern.
Yeah, no, that's a prime example. You know, I have compassion for folks that operate at airports where there is a published right-hand pattern because of obstacles or other considerations. They must deal rather frequently with individuals coming into their right-hand pattern making left-hand turns, in other words, assuming that it's a left-hand pattern. And conversely, one of the other no-nos, if you will, is turning a left-hand pattern into a right-hand pattern. In other words, making a right base entry to final instead of a normal left base entry to final. You know, we don't have to become, you know, compulsive about traffic pattern entries. Theoretically, we can enter the pattern on any leg. And I think Daryl points out his other criticism without communicating, and that becomes a problem. Today's day and age with radios in almost every airplane now, there's just simply no excuse for not communicating our position when making entries into the pattern. And just let me say one more time at the risk of sounding like a broken record. So many times we hear individuals giving their positions relative to some landmark on the ground that may be well known to local pilots, but for the rest of us, we may not know where the ponds are or where the golf course is or the over the country club. We need to be giving our position reports reference the airport, reference the landing runway using standard nautical miles.
Well, yes. And I guess I would say that if there is a landmark that you can't possibly miss, there may be times that's helpful, but at the same time, for someone who's 10 miles out, even that may be of little use.
Well, yes. Again, I don't think anybody does this with, you know, bad intention. It's an obvious way of reporting one's position. But I think it's not all that difficult today, given the pervasive use of GPSs. I mean, we've heard position reports 4.2 miles from, you know, from the end of the runway, you know, as if we're going to squabble over 0.2 miles. You know, I'd be happy if somebody would just pinpoint their location within 2 miles.
Well, Bob, you had some specific recommendations, principles regarding pattern work. And this seemed to be in the spirit of give us some do's, not just don'ts.
Well, yes, there's lots of things that we can do. First of all is certainly communicate what we are supposed to be doing or what we intend to do in the pattern. Number two, enter the pattern at the proper altitude. Number three, keep our patterns reasonably short without allowing us to get, you know, so far from the airport or the runway that we can't find each other in the pattern. These are common sense things that I think we all need to work on. I find pilots who have been trained, for example, at tower-controlled airports very often will transfer what is customarily a large pattern dictated by controllers who are sequencing them with Airbus 320s and things like that, where naturally they have to turn on a 4 to 5 mile final. But when they bring those practices over to a non-towered field, that can cause all kinds of frustration among other pilots who are trying to keep tight patterns.
Well, I have some friends who fly things like gyroplanes and ultralights and some very light sport aircraft, and a lot of times it puts a burden on a controller to understand that these guys may be used to flying a pattern, you know, a couple hundred feet from the runway at 500 feet. And it's completely unproductive to send them on a long downwind, you know, keep them in close, and they can do all kinds of things to delay if they need to.
Well, that's it. And that's one of the challenges that we're facing, because we are mixing. We have airports, non-towered airports, that are mixing gyrocopters with Citation jets. Mm-hmm. And that causes a problem. But going back to Daryl's observation, let's talk. Let's get on the radio. Let's give our position reports, and let's just use some common sense. And certainly, let's keep our eyes out the window. One of the difficulties that we're seeing in the glass cockpit airplanes, we use the G1000 setup in our airplanes at the flight school. We find students and pilots fixating on the glass cockpit, looking at precise airspeeds, power settings, and all of the graphics that are displayed there, and not looking out the window when they are in the traffic pattern. That's one time where we have to be 95% out the window. 5% in on the cockpit.
All right, Bob, when we come back from the break, you had a listener who sent you a terrific letter that is going to appear in Over the Airwaves, and I think it would be great to share it with our listeners and discuss some of the lessons we could learn from it in a moment. Bob Beller is my guest. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Freedom through control. Cirrus has completely reinvented the personal aircraft and the entire experience of owning a personal aircraft. It's a bold new take on private aviation that we call Cirrus Flying 2.0. You set the schedule. You chart the course. You're in control.
Piperjet.
Hypersport.
Piper Match.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved. At facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. We're talking about safety issues today, and Bob, you shared with me an email that you got from a Stephen Green who enjoys our podcasts, and we had been talking about some of the issues that can happen in flight, and he sent you a kind of a really scary recollection of a story of a near miss that he encountered at one time. And let's talk about that story and some of the things we could learn from it.
Well, this individual resides, I gather, in the Michigan area, and he was flying along on a VFR, severe clear VFR day, enjoying himself. In contact or was monitoring the Pontiac Tower, and through his own admission, for some reason, chose not to to obtain radar flight following services, and was just enjoying the day. And then suddenly, to his surprise, he had a wing on his 152 dip precipitously, and he corrected it, thinking that maybe it was some unusual meteorological condition in the atmosphere, I presume. But when he looked up, I guess Piper Meridian, which is a large single, single-engine aircraft just pass by no more than 50 feet or so, causing a near collision, which would have had catastrophic outcomes. Mm-hmm. And he shared in his email with me how important it is for all of us to keep our eyes open and realize that the big sky theory that some of us hold is not as big as we think, that a collision like this could be certainly a life-ending event, and it's something that we can all learn from.
Well, and these two aircraft, he said he was on a heading of about 260, and he estimated that the Meridian was on a heading of about 290. So, this was a case where there should have been some time where either one of them, I guess in theory, should have been able to see the other one coming. I guess the Meridian would have been coming up pretty fast behind him. But at some point, the Meridian pilot really should have seen him.
Yes, of course, we don't know the circumstances or all of the details. I think Stephen, in his email, had postulated that the Meridian pilot was likely on an autopilot and was perhaps just simply not looking out the window. And you're absolutely right. On a severe, clear day like this, even a Cessna 152 or 150 will stand out there if you're looking. And so there was a couple of points that he made and a couple of points that I tried to make that could be used to reduce the likelihood of a mid-air collision under any circumstance. The first one is always talk to ATC. I mean, today there's just simply no excuse for not giving ATC a call, letting them know where you're at, asking for radar advisories or flight following. We do it all of the time in the flight school. Even when we go out to the practice area, I mean, it's very assuring, although we can't depend upon it. But, ATC has that extra pair of eyes, and they can see the big picture, and they know where other traffic is. But in order for them to do their job, the second point is something that we all have to bear in mind. If we have a transponder, and of course we all should, be sure it's turned on. And not only turned on, but turned on to mode C or altitude encoding. That's the only way that ATC can reliably know that it's an aircraft up there rather than, say, a flock of birds. The third thing that we have to do is some aircraft setups with TCAS, traffic collision alert systems, or traffic information service systems in their airplane, be sure it's turned on and working properly. We can turn traffic off if we want to and sometimes forget to turn it back on. If we have it on our airplane, let's be sure that we have that on to take advantage of it. And then lastly, and I, like I'm sure many pilots who operate on occasion with their autopilots, we've got to understand that when the airplane is being operated or guided by the autopilot, that does not exempt us from looking out the window. And when our autopilots are operating and we're on an IFR flight plan, if the weather is VMC, visual meteorological conditions, the instrument pilot still has a responsibility to see and avoid. So let's not let the autopilot and having an IFR plan, exempt us from the importance of looking out the window all the time.
I have to make an observation too, Bob. He said he was hand flying his Cessna 150. The 25 foot difference that he might have had from being right on the money on altitude might have saved his life. We're going to be coming into an era within a few years where most planes and a lot of light sport aircraft already have GPS coupled autopilots. If you had this same circumstance happen with two planes on GPS coupled autopilots, they would not have been 25 feet difference in altitude.
Well, that is a very, very important observation, not only vertically, but laterally as well. When we're steering down the center line of an airway or a direct line between two VORs, with an autopilot being driven by a GPS, we are right on the center line. And I think our founding fathers who constructed the National Airway System, they had a lot of wisdom back then when they made a federal airway 8 miles wide, 4 miles either side of the center line, mm-hmm. simply to allow for vagaries in the VOR signal. But now we're straight on collision course if we're going laterally, and like you say, if we're getting altitude guidance as well through the autopilot, we're going to be right on the altitude. So that the normal error in this system that would oftentimes protect us, as it likely did in this case, may not be there any longer.
Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate these thought-provoking Mondays. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Paul.
This Best of Bob was originally presented in late 2008. Bob Miller's newsletter has been on hiatus the past few months, but returns to its regular schedule next month. Find out more and access the archives at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.